We're holding on page 34 in Yerushalmi Tainis, Oisiyud Gimel. In the course of the Perek, it talks about the case. You have a situation where it rains only in one city and not in another, and then the one that's not had the one that is having the drought, they have to daven and fast for rain, but the other surrounding cities also need to do something. And it's machlokas, the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva, what exactly they have to do, because like we learned yesterday, eventually the trouble could spread to them, if nothing else, the city, because they're having shortages, are going to end up having to buy grain and whatnot from them, and they may end up having shortages, and therefore they should be davening or fasting proactively for it. So in that connection, this idea that that you can have rain falls very selectively, only in some places where Hashem decides. So the Gemara brings Rabbi Rechia, Rabbi Kelboy, Papa, B'shem Rabbi Eliezer, as usual in the Yerushalmi style. This means that Rabbi Rechia said in the name of Rabbi Kelboy, who said in the name of Rabbi Papa, etc., that Pa'amim, it can happen that rain falls just in the schus of one individual person. The Bavli also mentions this earlier in the Masechta, that you can have one individual person who deserves to have rain, and Hashem will give rain, and Hashem will give rain particularly for him. Now, yesterday we talked about, the Gemara had talked about, that Hashem usually judges according to the Rov, but that would be where it's something that affects the Jewish people collectively, so then Hashem judges the tzaddikim as part of the roiv as well. Here we're talking about something that he needs individually for himself personally, so that Hashem will provide it for him personally. You could have one particular blade of grass or one particular plant that needs the rain, and Hashem will send davka to that one. Or there can be one particular field that needs it. The expression b'schus esav echad, b'schus sod echad, obviously the herb or the field don't themselves have schusim. What we mean is, in other words, that the owner of that herb, or the owner of that plant or of that field, has schusim that will cause that Hashem will send rain specially for him. And we actually see all those three implied in one pasuk. So in other words, even you can have where it's all three, it's one individual person who has one particular blade of grass or in one particular place in his field that needs rain, then Hashem will provide just for that. We see all those three things represented in one pasuk. The pasuk says, "Shalom Hashem Motor," ask of Hashem the rain, that because Hashem is the one who makes thunderstorms and Hashem is the one who makes rainfall. And the pasuk continues, "Umetar Geshem Yitin Lahem," he will give them showers of rain. "L'ish Esev Basode," to each man, to each grass in each field. So that means, so the simple meaning, ish esav asadim, the word ish over there would mean each one. Like you have ish v'ish can mean each individual. But here, the Gemara is darshaning as if it means that it's three different things. Ish aval lo la'anoshim. So for one individual person, even though it's not a whole bunch of people. La'esev, for one individual plant, aval lo la'asavim, but not for the herbs in general. So most of them are growing well, but there's one particular one that needs rain, then Hashem will provide rain specifically for it. Basadeh, in one field, in the singular, aval lo basadeis, but not, even when it's not needed for fields in the plural. So therefore, we have this concept. So again, the Bavli had brought it also earlier in the Masechta. Rish Lakish had said that in the Bavli, and the Gemara actually gives an example of one of the Chachamim, Reb Daniel Bar Rav Ktina, who would go to his garden every day and say this particular part needs rain, and Hashem would send rain dafka to that part. So the Gemara continues. Obviously, this fits very well, of course, concept Gachapratis, that Hashem decides even happen with every individual grass. Way, you know, before the Baal Shem Tov, it was generally accepted among most of the Chachamim. The Rambam, for example, writes about this and others, that Hashgacha Pratis really only applies to people, and really within that, only to people who deserve it. Everybody else, everything else is really under only Hashgacha Klolis. There's a general Hashgacha on, for example, the species of animals in general, species of plants in general, but not on every individual one, until the Baal Shem Tov came along and taught the concept of Hashgacha Pratis, even on every individual blade of grass and every individual leaf on the tree, and over time, that's become the normative understanding among most of Klal Yisrael. The Rambam, interestingly, for example, in his times, mentions this as a possibility, but he very roundly rejects it. So this is one of the examples of a chiddush that the Baal Shem Tov brought in, which became generally accepted. And anyway, so our Gemara fits very well with that also, because you're saying that Hashem is sending rain individually for each blade of grass. The Rambam Mestama would answer that, look, after all, it's only in the schus of the person who owns that blade of grass, so therefore it's Hashgacha Pratis on him. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yosi Babun, b'schus gimul dvarim agshamim yodin. There are three things, actually. There's three, the schus of three things that can cause that rain will fall. B'schus ha'aretz, the schus of the land, that it's Eretz Yisrael, or b'schus ha'chesed, and that Hashem does it as a special chesed, even if the people don't deserve it. Or it can also mean that the people are doing chesed. Or b'schus ha'yisurin, or it can be in the schus of that people have been undergoing yisurim, and therefore Hashem has rachmanos on them and sends rain. And again, Shloshim and Pasuk Echad, we see all three of them again in one single pasuk, where Elihu says to Eov, "Im l'shevet, if it may be for a stick, for a rod, like the kind that a person is hit with, im la'artzai, or for his land, im l'chesed, or for chesed yamtzeihu, Hashem will make the rain available." So, in other words, any of these three factors can be a reason for Hashem to send rain. When we learned about this in the Bavli, it had taken a different view of that pasuk, a different explanation of the pasuk, that it means that you can have, for example, that Hashem decided that we learned in Masechta Rosh Hashanah. We also learned it briefly a few days ago, actually, to say a similar concept here in the Yerushalmi, that you can have where, for example, Hashem decided at the beginning of the year that there's going to be very little rain because the people weren't living up to what they were supposed to, and now they did tshuva. So now it was l'shevet. It was as a rod of punishment, but now Hashem makes it im la'artzai. Hashem makes it that it'll be specifically for the land, for every part of the land that needs it, im l'chesed, and in a way of chesed, where every drop will go where it needs to. Perek b'shloisha the last perek of the last perek of Tainis starts by talking about the ma'amados, and then the last few mishnayos of it talk about the fasts that we do nowadays in commemoration of the Churban, Shavuos and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av and the rest of that group. So the Yerushalmi has over here a long sugya about the Churban. It is, by the way, one of the, like this, we're more familiar with. You have the sugya in Gittin, that in Bavli and Gittin, that talks about the Churban, one of the things that we're allowed and encouraged to learn on Tisha B'Av. There's actually a long piece here in the Yerushalmi that is also suitable for that purpose as well. It also talks in some detail about the Churban. Anyway, in the middle of it, the Gemara points out like this. Now you have as follows. When it comes to the second Beis HaMikdash, it's universally agreed that the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on Shavuos and Tammuz, and that's one of the things that we commemorate with that fast. When it comes to the first Beis HaMikdash, though, the Pasuk says that the walls were breached on the 9th of Tammuz. So what is that? So what does that mean? So there's a few possibilities. So the Bavli, when it discusses this, brings up that it was the 9th. But the reason the Chachamim were not Keveya two Tanesim is going to be very hard for us to fast only a week apart between the 9th and 17th, only 8 days apart. The Chacham didn't want to impose on us two fasts for basically the same kind of event. So therefore, they established it on Shavuos and Tammuz, because after all, the Golos we're in now is a result of the second Churban, not direct result of the first one. So therefore, we set the first one aside. But the Yerushalmi over here brings instead a possibility. And so the Bavli mentioned, so there's that, but there's also the point made that Kilkul Choshbonus Yesh Kan. The Rishalmi over here makes a point that there was a mix-up in calculations. In other words, people thought that it was the 9th, but really it was the 17th by the first Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem told the Navi, Hashem told Yirmiyah to record it as though it was the 9th, because that's what people thought. I once saw an explanation, actually, that I think maybe Maharsha says this, but I don't remember, that the vort is actually, it may have been both. It may have been the 9th of the secular month, because after all, the secular months you take from Tkufas Nisan to Tkufas Nisan and divide it in 12, more or less like the secular calendar we use nowadays. Whereas the Jewish calendar goes according to the moon, and there's a slippage of 11 days per year. So by the time you get from Tishrei to Tammuz, you have a slippage of approximately 8 days. So you can have that it would have been the 9th of the secular month, but the 17th of the Jewish month. So it could be both. Anyway, the Yerushalmi actually brings a possibility that not only it really was the 9th, but So that's the Gemara says. So the Gemara brings over here, Ramona Omar, Bain Commander Omar, Batisha Lachoda Shuvka Ir. Whether you follow the opinion that the wall of Yerushalayim was breached by Nebuchadnezzar's army on the 9th, Bain Commander Omar, the Yud Zayin B'Tammuz, or whether you follow the opinion that it was the 17th of Tammuz, either way, says Ramona, Miyom Shahuvka Ir Vad Yom Shahorav Abayas Chof Aleph Yom. Either way, it was 21 days from when the war was breached until the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, which would mean then, according to the opinion, now like this, universally, we know, you ask any kid, when was the Beis Mikdash destroyed? I'll tell you Tisha B'Av. Okay, strictly speaking, the Gemara points out, based on Psukim, that they set it on fire on the 9th and burnt throughout most of the 10th. Rabbi Yochanan says if he had been there at the time, he would have established the fast on the 10th. The bottom line is, but here the Yerushalmi is saying, Rabbi Moina is saying, that no, according to the opinion, if we take the Pasuk at face value, and the war was actually broken through, was actually breached on the 9th of Tammuz, then the Churban was 3 weeks later, 21 days later, on Aleph of and not on Tes, and not on Tisha B'Av. Again, this is, we're talking about the first Churban. So according to that opinion, it was the 9th of Tammuz and the 1st of Av, respectively. According to the other opinion, it was the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. Omer Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says, Hados Simona. In fact, you have a simon for that. Why Dafka 21 days? You find at the beginning of Yirmiyah's Nevuah, Hashem shows him, we have it as the Haftarah of the first of the 3 weeks. Hashem shows him a vision and asks him, what do you see? And he says, Makel Shoked Aniroya. I see a stick from an almond tree. So why Dafka? And Hashem tells him you've observed well. He shoked on the advori lasos. Hashem says a shoked is an almond tree, and it's related to the word shoked. I'm diligent. I'm quick to do what I'm going to say. So the same way Hashem says I'm going to bring about what I'm saying very quickly. But there's another comparison as well. Mahaluz hazeh, just like an almond in Tanakh Hebrew, it's called a shoked. In Gemara Hebrew, it's called a luz. Anyway, from when it blossoms until the fruit finishes, until the nut finishes developing, is 21 days. Therefore, the same way, Hashem is hinting that from when the wall is breached until Yerushalayim is destroyed, is 21 days. Exactly that. The opinion that says that the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed on Rosh Chodesh Av, he would say, working backwards, Betisha L'Chodesh Shuvka Ir. Therefore, the war was breached on the 9th, 21 days earlier. And in other words, we would take the Pasuk that says that it was the 9th at face value. Or Manda Omer Betisha B'Av Chorav Abayis, the opinion that says that it was on the 9th of Av, would have to say, B'Yud Zayin B'Tammuz Shuvka Ir, that the war was breached on the 17th, and we'd have to use one of the answers that we said before, that we'd have to use the answer that there was a kilkul, as the Yerushalmi had said earlier, that there was a kilkul cheshbonus, that there was a mix-up in calculations, and the Pasuk records it as the 9th, even though in fact it was the 17th. An interesting thing in that regard, actually, that's the Yerushalmi brings in this connection. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel where Hashem tells him a nevuah. Hashem tells him a nevuah be'echad lachodesh on the first of the month, and Hashem tells him a nevuah about the city of Tsur, where they're very happy that the Beis Mikdash has been destroyed and Yerushalayim has been destroyed, because they figure now all of the commerce, all of the business that used to go to Yerushalayim, where merchants would come all over the place to trade in Yerushalayim, now they're going to come to us instead. So the question is, what do you mean the first of what month? If you're talking about the first of Av, on the face of it, the Beis Mikdash wasn't destroyed yet. And if you mean the first of Elul, it doesn't take 3 weeks for news to travel from Yerushalayim to Tsur. They're not far. They're at opposite ends of Eretz Yisrael, but they're not that far apart. So that supports the possibility then that it was in fact the first of Av, and that it would fit. And it would fit well with this opinion that we're saying over here, that in fact the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed on the first of Av, and that same day the news got to Tsur, and therefore they're rejoicing about it, and Yechezkel is criticizing them for that, and saying you're going to be severely punished for that kind of attitude. Anyway, the point is that the point is though that we have, based on that, we do have a very strong reason to say, in fact, that it was that it was. On Rosh Chodesh Av. Yechezkel, by the way, doesn't actually identify what month he's talking about. He just says it was in the 11th month on the first day of the month. So So one way of understanding is that it was Rosh Chodesh Av. There are different other mafarshim talk about different other possibilities, what month it could be. One possibility Rashi mentions over there, that actually one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Eliezer Mebelganz, he mentions, fine, Yerushalayim wasn't destroyed yet, but things were so bad, it was obvious that it's going to fall soon, that already the people of Tzur can be happy at that point. So it would still work, according to the opinion that it was on the 9th of Av as well. Okay, the Gemara continues. So again, the Gemara has a long sugya over here with various stories and details about the Churban. So in this connection, it mentions Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Pei Elef Pirchei Kohuna Borchu. At the time of the Churban, 80,000 young Kohanim ran away. V'nishavavu l'seich kaltusim shel beis hamikdash. They ended up getting singed in the kaltusim of the beis hamikdash. Kaltusim, different mafoshim explain. Eitz Yosef brings over here that it means the toyim, the little rooms that surrounded the heichal. Different one of the other mafoshim explain it means underground tunnels.
80,000.
So 80,000, we're saying when, yeah. The Chulan Nisrufu Miyad, and all of them were burnt up when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. When the Heichal was burnt, then they were burnt as well. The Bavli, by the way, also mentions this about the Kohanim getting burnt, but it says, well, actually, we had it in Yerushalmi, actually, some time earlier. We had when Yehoyachin, when Yechonia threw the keys of the Beis Hamikdash up to Shemayim, that many Kohanim died at that time. The Bavli also mentions it in connection with the Churban. I don't think it says that they were burnt, but whatever, that many Kohanim were killed. The only one left of those Kohanim who survived was Yehoshua ben Yehoshadok, who became the first Kohen Gadol in the second Beis HaMikdash. His father, Yehoshadok, was the last Kohen Gadol of the first Beis HaMikdash. But Yehoshua was the only one who survived, and he lived to see the second Beis Hamikdash and become its first Kohen Gadol. Shenemar, as the Navi says on him, Haloi ze ud mutzal me'esh, isn't he a brand that was saved from the fire, burning like as if like a burning piece of wood that was saved from the fire? So in other words, out of that fire that consumed all those other Kohenim, he was the only one that was left. The Bavli also mentions that pasuk and darshens it, but it explains in it that that's a different story where Yehoshua ben Yehoshadok was saved from a fire. The Bavli tells us in Sanhedrin and Perek Chelek a whole story over there involving there were two false Nevi'im at that time, Achav ben Koloya and Sidkiyo ben Maaseya, who were going around and claiming one of them would go to a woman and claim to her that Hashem said that you should have relations with the other one, and then so each of them, so they had the scam going on over there, and they were tricking many women into this until they tried it on Nebuchadnezzar's daughter, and they ended up getting thrown into a fire for it. So the Gemara describes over there, they thought, they realized we're Rishayim, there's no way we're going to survive that. So they figured if we have Yehoshua ben Yehoshadok, the Tzaddik, with us, then we'll be safe. So in the end, it wasn't that way. They were burned. Yehoshua was saved, but nevertheless, his clothes were singed. So that's another example where he was saved from a burning fire. Okay. Masechta Megillah Perek Rishon. So Masechta Megillah begins talking, of course, about the dinim of laning the Megillah. So in that connection, the Gemara ends up discussing the whole dialogue that Esther had with the Chachamim about the writing of the Megillah. The Bavli also brings it in Masechta Megillah as well, that Esther wants the Chachamim should write down the whole story, and they're saying that they're arguing on various grounds that they shouldn't, and they ended up finding a proof in the Torah that they should. So the Gemara says over here, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Lakish argue about what's going to happen with the Torah in the future times of Yemos HaMashiach. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Hanavi. So again, eventually the Chachamim agreed that Megillas Esther has to be written and has to be part of Kisrei HaKodesh. So. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Hanaviim vaKesuvim Asidim liBatol. In the future, the books of Neviim and Kesuvim are going to be bottle. Now, what do you mean bottle? Torah Azos LaTeim Oflefes. We'll explain that in a minute. But those books are going to become bottle. VaChamesha Sifrei Torah Einan Asidim liBatol. But the five books of the five Chumashim are never going to be bottle. Ma'Taima? Why? Because the pasuk says Moshe describes the Matan Torah Kol Gadol V'Lo Yosef, a great voice from Hashem that never ended. So never ended means that the Torah is never ending. It never has an expiration date, unlike the Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Now, one way of looking at it is it means at face value, because Eitz Yosef says, after all, I mean, the Gemara elsewhere tells us, the Bavli tells us in Nedarim, that really the Jewish people would have really only, had they not sinned, we would have really needed only the five Chumashim and Sefer Yoshua. The five Chumashim, because we have all the mitzvahs in them, and Sefer Yoshua, because it has the boundaries and borders of the individual Shvatim within Eretz Yisrael. All the other Sfarim were written basically because we messed up at different times, and Hashem had to send Nevi'im to tell us off and to tell us where we're going wrong and how to fix things up and to teach us things that it wasn't so obvious from the Torah. After all, the Gemara points out, like a midi deloda mizi baraisa, there's nothing even in the books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim that's not hinted at in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. So in principle, we shouldn't have needed the books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. They were only needed because of our Averis. So now we're saying, La'asid Lover, they will be Bottle. So the simple sense is, means they'll be Bottle. We don't need them anymore. Everything that we can learn from them, we can learn directly from Chumash. Even say for Yoshua, which we're not going to need so much because, again, the main reason we needed it, as the Gemara says over there, is to know the borders of the Shvatim. Well, La'asid Lover, the division of Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim is going to be in a completely different way anyway. It's going to be instead of like this, in the division in Yeshua's times, each Sheva got an irregular shaped portion in Eretz Yisrael. La'asid Lover, Yechezkel describes, it's going to be straight strips, one below the other, going across the land. What about Tehillim? So nevertheless, I mean, the point is, if it hadn't been for everything, the point is that since we're saying Lekha Midi Deloda Mizi Baraisa, if it hadn't been for Ilu Lechotu Yisrael, we wouldn't have needed Sefer Tehillim, whatever we want to say to Hashem, we would have been able to understand from Chumash how to praise Hashem and how to ask Hashem and so forth in our own words. So on the face of it, that's on the face of it what it means that there'll be bottle. Akosev actually brings from the Rashba, who was asked this question, and he has it in one of his Shelos Atruvos. What do you mean? How could it be that even a single letter of the Torah is going to be bottled? So actually, that was more he was being asked not so much about the books of Tanakh. For that, we can say again because everything that's in them, everything in the books of Nach is included within Chumash. Rather, he was asked about the next point, actually, that the Medrash says something different, that all the Moyadim, all the Yom Tovim are going to be bottled Asid Lavo, except for Purim. And then the Medrash says that Yesh Omerim also Yom Kippur. So they ask the Rashba, what do you mean? Torah Zos Lotei Mochlefes. Nothing of the Torah can ever change. So he answers them basically that what that medrash means is all the other Yom Tovim, it could happen at one time or another because the Jewish people are suffering tzaras, Rachman al-Tlan, they might forget one or the other of them temporarily. We don't mean permanently. We mean it might happen one year, they forget to celebrate Pesach or they forget to celebrate Sukkot or whatever. But Purim is guaranteed because the Pasuk says, Lo yavru mitaycha yehudim v'zichrom lo yosuch mizaram. And then Yom Kippur as well is that The opinion that Yom Kippur will never be bottle either is because since the pasuk implies, according to Rebbe, he holds Yom Kippur as machaper whether the people do tshuva or not. So even if they don't end up observing Yom Kippur, nevertheless, it's still going to be in effect. Another point over here, Anaf Yosef makes a point over here at the bottom of the page that really when you get down to it, all the Yomim Tovim, except for Purim, really have to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's why we say on all of them, Zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim. Well, Osed Lovo, as we know, it says that Yitzias Mitzrayim is going to kind of take a back seat to the commemoration of the Gula Amitis Vashlema. So we're still going to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim, but it's going to be a secondary thing. In that sense, the Yom Tovim will be bottle, not bottle as in we won't observe them, but they won't be as important as before, as opposed to Purim is not directly related to Yitzis Mitzrayim, so therefore it won't lose any of its status. And then he goes on to explain in some detail, so why would Yom Kippur be special in that regard as well? And he explains basically nowadays what the tshuva that we do on Yom Kippur is because we've done Averis. But La'asid Lavi, where there won't be a Yetzer Hara, Ruach HaToma Avim and Aretz, the kind of thing a person is going to have to do tshuva for is, for example, where he's trying to go too far, too fast in his avoda without realizing that he has to go in certain stages. So that will exist, La'asid Lavi, and therefore you can say that Yom Kippur will never be bottle either.
Not enough
too much rotten, not enough shali, basically, yeah. Okay, so Reb Shimon Lakish Amar, Af Megillas Esther, V'halachos Einim Asidin Libato. Rish Lakish says that also Megillas Esther and the halachos of Torah, meaning in other words, it's one thing the words of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, those will be bottle in the sense that we won't need them because we'll be able to derive all of them from the Torah. But the actual halachos of the Torah, it says Rish Lakish, Einim Asidin Libato, those are never going to be bottle either. Because again, from the same pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan learns from, Nemakan Kir Godovala Yosef, it says Hashem spoke in a great voice that never ceased. The Nemalahalan Vizikram La Yosef Mizaram. We have the same word Yosef in connection with Megillas Esther, that the remembrance of it will never cease from among the Jewish people. Halachos, and where do we see that the halachos are going to exist forever? Shenema Halichos Olam Loi, because the pasuk says the ways of the world are his. Which also we darshan, as we say every day in davening, al tikra halichos ela halachos, and olam means not only the world but also forever. So we understand it to mean, as Rav Shlokish understand it to mean, halichos meaning the halachos, olam loy are forever Hashem's, and they're never going to be bottled. There's a famous sicha that the Rebbe talked about this in connection with the 1 year Hadron on the Rambam in Sukkos Nun Beis, where the Rebbe talked extensively about this. The Rambam brings this for halacha at the end of Hilchos Megillah. The Rambam brings this point, according to Rish Lakish, that all the Sforim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim are going to be bottled except the Megillas Esther, and the Rambam says it's like the five Chumashim and like the halachas of the Torah, which are never going to be bottled. So following Rish Lakish's opinion over here, and there's a long sicha where the Rebbe analyzes many, many different angles on this and explains the idea is the halachas are the crown of Torah, as the Alter Rebbe explains in various places in Tanya, so therefore those are going to exist forever. And Megillas Esther, he goes into a long arichus over there because we have Melchama l'Hashem ba'Amalek midur, and now we have the war with Amalek is mentioned. So in other words, it's an ongoing thing. It always is relevant in every generation, unlike many of the other books of Tanakh, which after all, I mean, they have a message for us for all time. But after all, they're connected with specific events that happen at one time. Mashiach develops the idea in that sicha at some length that you have. Based on the previous piece of Gemara over here in Yerushalmi and also in the Bavli, that now you have the war with Amalek is mentioned in a few places. It's mentioned in Chumash, it's also mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, and it's mentioned here in Megillas Esther, but the one in Sefer Shmuel is more like a Zikora, and the Gemara calls it serves as Zikora in Vasefer. It's a remembrance of what happened at the time. So therefore, like any remembrance, eventually it can go away, as opposed to Megillas Esther, because in the end, Esther convinced the Chachamim to write it, it's considered it has the definition of a Sefer, serves as Zikora in safer, and therefore it has a unique status unlike all the other books, whereas Rish Lakish says it's going to exist forever. The what it represents, the war against Amalek, the fighting against Reishis Goyim Amalek, and the fact that it becomes a safer on an equal level in some ways with Chumash means that it's never going to be bottled. Okay, further on in the Perek, It's funny, you know, the Yerushalmi itself has a style sometimes where it'll jump from one topic to another without giving you any warning that it's doing that. And the Bavli you usually have, like, you know, Tnan Hosam, or you'll have a quotation from the Mishnah between two dots or whatever. And the Yerushalmi often doesn't do that because the Yerushalmi was never really fully finished being edited. It's more a raw record of how they discuss things in the Beis Medrash, as opposed to the Bavli went through many generations of editing by Ravina and Ravashi, and afterwards by the Rabban and Sivaroi, etc. Anyway, so here you have, it seems that the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov kind of did the same thing. He jumps into a completely different part without even having a dot over here or anything. Anyway, later on in the Perek, in the first Perek of Megillah, You have the famous collection of Ein Beins. The Mishnah says there's no difference between Adurishin and Adursheni except for the mitzvahs of Purim, except for certain mitzvahs of Purim, Kriyas HaMegillah, Matanas Lev Yoidim, and then you have the next few Mishnayos all begin Ein Bein. There's no difference between this and this except for one particular thing. So one of them is, it says that there's no difference between Sifrei Torah versus Tefillin and Mezuzahs, except that Sifrei Torah can be written in any language and they have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah, and Tefillin and Mezuzahs can be written only in Lashon Kodesh. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion about the languages, which connects with our parasha as well, Vashkacha Pratis, where we're learning it now. The Pasuk says, Ksiv, Vayihi chola oret sofa achas udvorim achodim. All of the earth, all of the people on earth had one sofa and one dvorim. So what does that mean? What were they speaking before the languages were mixed up? Rabbi Loza and Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Loza and Rabbi Yechanan argue what they were speaking at that time. Chad Omer Shalim Adabrim Ba'ayim Loshen. One says they were speaking all 70 languages. So in other words, the languages existed at that time, but everybody knew all of them. So in that case, what happened after Hashem scattered them is each group forgot all the other languages except for their one, and therefore they couldn't intercommunicate anymore. The other one says, the other one says that the Dvorim Achodim means they were speaking in the Loshen of Yechidei Shel Olam, the unique one of the world, which means Loshen HaKodesh. So they were all speaking Loshen Kodesh, and that's how they could intercommunicate with each other, and then Hashem mangled up their languages, and now each one has a different language, and they can't communicate. With the idea being, in other words, Mephoshim make a point, because they were united over there for the fact that they all had one language allowed them to be united in a common purpose, and that's very dangerous. So Hashem therefore split them up, and therefore now they don't have that ability. So now that makes them much less dangerous. There's a Mishnah that has an expression about that. When Rishoyim are able to gather together, it's bad for them and bad for the world, and when they're split up, it's good for them and good for the world to hear. Hashem split them up, and therefore they're able to do much less harm when they can't even communicate with one another. Some Mephoshim, by the way, want to kind of combine these two things. Maybe they had their maybe each group had their own language, but they also used Lashon Kodesh as a common language between all of them. Even in times closer to ours, you sometimes have where people use one language for one purpose and a different language for a different purpose. Okay. At the end of the Perek, it talks about that there's no difference, it says, between the Mishkan and Shiloh and the Beis Mikdash and Yerushalayim, except for the details of where korbanos to be eaten. And then the Mishnah continues that there's a difference also after each one of them was destroyed. After Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, Bamos, private Mizbechus, became Mutter again. But after the Beis Mikdash and Yerushalayim was destroyed, then Bamos were not Mutter. And then to this very day, they're not. So that leads the Gemara over here into a discussion about what about if a goy wants to bring a korban nowadays. So it brings that Antoninus asked the Rebbe, if I want to put up a mizbeach nowadays and I want to bring a korban, can I do that? And Rebbe tells him, yes. The Bavli also has a discussion of this point and the relevant halachas at the end of Zvachim. Ada Yemazeh, that's the halacha. A goy wants to bring a korban, he could do that any place in the world nowadays. Interestingly, the Yerushalmi mentions actually that Antoninus asks Rebbe, can I bring ketores to Hashem? And Rebbe tells him, yes, but you have to leave out one ingredient. So the Gemara asks why. Antoninus, being a goy, is not bound by the mitzvah of not making a duplicate of a Torah. And so the Gemara explains that actually it wasn't, Rebbe was going to have one of his Talmidim named Reb Ramonus duplicate the Torah for Antoninus. And of course, as a Yid, he wouldn't be allowed to duplicate it exactly. So Rebbe tells him to leave out an ingredient.
Servant, where
anywhere in the world he wants, and that's the point. If a goy wants to bring a korban in the Beis Mikdash, he has to follow all rules. His korban can't have any of the things that we consider to be a mum, that our Torah considers to be a mum. He can't bring ketores, for example. No private person can bring ketores. Any animal that he brings as a korban can only be an ola, and according to some opinions, also a shlomim, etc. But if he wants to bring a korban anywhere else in the world, then he has fewer rules. He can bring an animal, even that it has a mum, as long as not missing Rosh Evorim. There's actually the piece of Gemara before what's here in Ein Yaakov actually brings in that connection a pasuk from our parasha. Hashem tells Noach to bring into him into the teva mikol hochai mikol boser, and that means that chayim Rosh Evorim shalom means that it has to have that all of its limbs are intact. So even a Ben Noach can't offer a Mechusar Ever, but he can offer an animal that has a moon.
Did they bring in the Chaya Torah?
Yeah, Mikol HaBehema Torah, Mikol HaBehema, yeah.
Seven of them?
Yeah.
Even though they were not markered, the
so, right, so, well... So the truth is, when we say that, I mean, Rashi mentions Mikol HaBehema Torah because he's going to bring korbanos from them. Again, before the Torah was given, there may not have been that limitation. And even now, if a goy wants to bring a korban, there's not necessarily that limitation that it has to have to be cows, sheep, or goats. Wild animals may have been kosher for korbanos as well. Mm. After all, he also says Mikol HaOif HaTohar, and for us, only Torah Mubnei Yonah are valid korbanos. But yeah. Anyway. So now the Ein Yaakov brings in the next piece of the Gemara. Since we were discussing what Antoninus was asking Rebbe about bringing korbanos, so Antoninus omer le Rebbe, mechaltani atmin levyosan la'alma de'osi. Are you going to be able to give me a piece of the Levyasin in La'asid Lave when we have the Sodas Levyasin? Amale Ain, so Rebbe says, sure. Amale, so Antoninus is very surprised. Rebbe had just informed him before that he wouldn't be able to eat from the Korban Pesach. But he asks him, you wouldn't give me from the Korban Pesach, but you would give me from the Levyasin. Isn't the Dusha of the Levyasin much greater? So Rebbe tells him, what can I do for you? By the Korban Pesach, it says, no oro can eat from it. So as much of a nice guy as you are, and as much as you're my friend, and so on and so forth, fine, there's no halachas about that. I can do whatever I want. But the Korban Pesach, that's the halacha, and there's no fooling around with that.
Even
so he wasn't a Jew yet. Kivin to Shama Kane. So now when he heard that, Ozov a Gozer Garme, he went and made himself a Bris Mila and became a Ger. Also a gap, or maybe he didn't become a full ger yet, because a ger has to do it in front of Beis Din. But anyway, he did the first stage of it to do Bris Mila. Also a gabay, then he comes to Rebbe. Omalech, Rebbe, chamig zurosi. Look at my Mila. See, now I have a Mila. I should be able to eat, hypothetically, from your Korban Pesach. And also, it can also mean he's telling him, look at it and tell me, if I did the job right. Omalech, but Rebbe tells him no. In my whole life, I never even looked at my own mila. You want me to look at yours? And in fact, why is he called it Rabbeinu HaKadosh, which is a title that we don't give to any of the other Tanoim? That's why, because he had that extra degree of Kedusha that he never even looked at his own mila. But similarly, the Gemara digresses to mention Volomanikra Nochum Ish Kodesh Kadoshin. There was another Tana, it was called Nochum, and they called him the man of Kodesh Kadoshin. The Bavli, when it brings this instead, names him differently. It calls him Rabbi Nachum Reb Simoi, and it calls him Benon Shok Doshim, the son of the holy ones. Anyway, why? Shalehibit Betsuras Matbeya Miyamav. He never looked at the image on a coin. The image on a coin was going to be a picture of the emperor or a picture of some Greek or Roman Getchka or whatever. So Me'ikar Adin, there's no issue in looking at it because you're not looking at it, L'shem Avodazara, but he went the extra mile and wouldn't even do that. The Gemara mentions, by the way, in token of that, when he passed away, all of the statues that were in his area all of a sudden became flattened out, like a Bederach Ness. All of the those statues disappeared, like their facial features disappeared in token of what he had done during his lifetime. Some of them, Mefarshim actually explain, it wasn't necessarily Derech Ness. It means like they covered them. I think the Rishalmi actually says like they covered them as they were taking him to his Leviah, because they said it's not right. He didn't look at them while he was alive. It's not right. He should have to look at them after 120. Anyway, so Hado Amrit de Iskizir Antoninus. So based on this story, it comes out that Antoninus actually had a Bris Mila, which means that he became a ger, or at least took some of the steps towards it. On the other hand, and similarly, Milayhan Dirabon and Amrin Nisgayo Antoninus. There's another thing which the Chachamim say, which also indicates that Antoninus became a ger. First, the Gemara tries to say there was maybe an indication that he didn't become a ger, because the Gemara mentions that they saw him wearing shoes on Yom Kippur. But the Gemara slugs that up and says that's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara, the actual Yerushalmi, slugs that up and says no, the shoe was broken from underneath. It was just like the shell of the shoe from the outside, and that's not a problem to wear on Yom Kippur. So, but here the Gemara continues. There's other evidence that he actually became a ger. If the Geirei Tzedek are going to come in the future, now what do you mean if they're going to come? Of course they're going to come as part of the Jewish people. It means it's like a way of saying if even regular Geirim are going to come, how much more so Antoninus Babarosham. Antoninus is certainly going to be able to come, and he's going to be leading all of them. Another way of understanding that would be that if the Geirim are going to get a place in Eretz Yisrael, are going to get land in Eretz Yisrael, loss of love, then Antoninus will be at the head of the line to get his portion first. But obviously, either way, everybody agrees that Geir et Tzedek are going to be with us Jews, lost in love. Right? So the question is just whether we, so either the Gemara is saying it as like a figure of speech, like if even a regular Geir, how much more so Antoninus, who was an emperor and became a Geir, or it means that if the Geir et Tzedek are going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Masechta Chagiga, Perek Rishon. So beginning of Masechta Chagiga talks about the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Rego on the Sholosh Regalim. So Omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, minayin shekol makayim mitzvah sri'iyah ki'ilu makabal pnei shechina. How do we know that a person fulfills this mitzvah of being seen but in Hashem's presence is as if he's welcoming the shechina? Min hocha, because the pasuk says, Sholosh pam bashana yeruah chol zechurcha es pnei ha'odin Hashem. three times a year, all your males shall be seen in the presence of the master Hashem, which means, in other words, it's like as if like you're an Eved and you're greeting your master out of respect. So you have the distinction of being able to do that on a Leil Regel. Further on in the Perek, it talks about you have the mitzvah of Olas Re'iyah and the mitzvah of Shamei Chagiga, and you have the minimum amounts for each of them, a mor for one, two mois for the other, and it's Machlokas v'Shamei Basila, which is which. Anyway, the Mishnah mentions you can have a person who has very little money and he also has very few people to eat with him. So that's when he just does those minimums because he's poor. He only has to bring the minimum amount of korban ola, and because he has very few people to eat, he should bring the minimum amount of shlamim. On the other hand, the Mishnah says that if he has, what about if he has more people to eat, then he should be bringing more shlamim. If he's richer, he should be bringing more olas. And if he has more of both of them, then kevir kas Hashem alekecha asher nosan loch. So now the Yerushalmi comments on that also. Oni v'yodei rechava. What if you have a person who's poor, but he goes that extra mile and puts and then gives more money for korbanos, more than he can really afford? Kodani olav ish kematnas yodei. Then to him refers the pasuk, each person according to what he gives with his hand. In other words, that Hashem will bench him. That Hashem will bench him because he gave more than he wanted to. And we should accept it from him. In other words, the idea, as Akosef says, also means we shouldn't discourage him and say, look, you can't really afford it. Why are you doing that? Rather, we should realize he wants to give. Then by all means, we should accept it from him.
It doesn't say how much it is. It just says
he's giving more than he can afford. Yeah. On the other hand, if you have he's rich and he's being stingy and not bringing as much korbanos as you would expect based on his wealth, then we say on him, no, he should be bringing according to the bracha of Hashem that he gave him, meaning, in other words, that Beis Din would require him to actually give, or would actually force him to give according to what he can actually afford. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. So we know there are nisim that are enclosed in teva, and then there are nisim that are higher than teva. Here we were just talking about Purim, and that's a classic example of a nest that's enclosed in teva. So now one of the advantages of nisim that are enclosed in teva over the other kind, the Mitzvah Rebbe explains in Shara Emuna, once that when the nest is enclosed in teva, then it comes more begillery. When a nes comes not enclosed in teva, we know the metzius. We know that the nes happened, but not muhusa. We don't know how it happened. For example, the nes of tchias emesim, we're going to see in practice the guy was dead and now he's alive, but we're going to have no clue how he comes alive. And the same thing with all of the nisim l'mayla me'ateva. That's what, which is why those kind of nisim are called niflois, because the word pella means something that we can't even understand, that we can't even understand logically. What's today? And then I'm.
Hello. Yeah, I
wrote it
before.
Shlosh Prakam of certainly not. Maybe you mean Paraka? I don't know. Okay. Yeah, Shlosh Prakam of Ramam, there wasn't anything about it. It's about Mitan and Mishkov Moshe. Okay. I don't know. Paraka, I think it's currently in Hilkos Bechorus or something. Okay. Anyway. Yeah, I mean now we're in the Tofshin Pays, which is years of ploys. So we take a need ploys that are Lamaila that are the ploys harbe, yeah. Plus hagula, plus whatever other word you want to put after a hey, yeah, where we have things that are completely not understandable, but derech hateva, and Hashem makes them happen anyway. Yeah. Okay. New simon in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch simon Peivov.
Was because of last week.
Oh, is that something? Oh, the difference in Ness and Pella. Oh, when the Naaman was talking about Sarats, then there was an ois for Pella Bisrael. Got it. Okay. Okay. So we're talking about the dinim of bathing on Shabbos. Now, first of all, the dinim that we're talking about over here are when you already have hot water available. If you have a hot water, if you have the typical hot water boiler, where when you turn on your hot water tap, then more water has to come in. That's a whole different matter because it's bishul on Shabbos. That's a whole different issue. We're not even dealing with that. Anyway. You're not allowed to bathe your whole body on Shabbos, or even most of your body, in hot water, even if the water was heated up before Shabbos. However, the Alter Rebbe adds that if it's just mayim poshim, if it's lukewarm water, and it was made lukewarm before Shabbos, then that would be fine. Even if it's not all at once, even if a person is doing one body part at a time, still, if it amounts to roiv gufa, if it amounts to most of the body, then it would be osur. And even to go into a bathhouse, just to schwitz, would also be osur. Now, though, a person is allowed on Shabbos to bathe, to wash his face, hands, and feet using water that was heated up before Shabbos. As far as a mikveh, we'll talk about in a later sif what the dinim are as far as toveling on Shabbos.